It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020, and you know what that means. Mac is drinking a Mountain Dew, and also it's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 145 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary here with me, the miggity, 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 miggity Mac, also known as Maction. Mac, how are you, brother?
I'm doing pretty darn well, Mr. Nice Guy. I think I would say I'm even doing fantastic.
Fantastic? What made you do fantastic? What happened? Tell me about it.
You know, I've had a lot of opportunity lately to indulge my creative side. Whether that's been, you know, playing GURPS, playing tabletop role-playing games with you and some of the other wonderful people on the interwebs and here with us live. But also, I am currently prepping for an upcoming game that I will be running for Thread Raiders, which is a, you know, which is a stream channel here on Twitch.
Nice.
I could have parsed that better.
Nice.
That'll be next Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern to 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And I'm looking quite forward to it. Going to run GURPS, which is going to be fun because, you know, because you very regularly see streamed, like, Dungeons & Dragons.
Yep.
So it'll be nice to, you know, stream something different. But also we're running something in the Firefly universe.
Ooh, fantastic.
And I think there's going to be a unique twist on it that might be appreciated.
Now,
but yeah,
when you say next Sunday, because that can,
yes.
Sometimes we get mixed up. We're not talking Sunday the 28th, so not this coming
yes,
Sunday.
Yes, we are talking Sunday the
28th. Okay, so this coming Sunday.
Yep.
So if you're listening to this podcast after it goes live tomorrow, Wednesday the 24th, then it will be the same week. It'll be the 28th. That you can listen to Mac do his GURPS thing. Correct.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Correct. Sunday the 28th. Very much looking forward to it. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Also, it's hard not to be excited to know that once we hit July, which is coming up, you know, at the coming up partway through next week, the next time we do record, we will record on June 30th. And then once July 1st hits, that's when we will be open for listener nominations for that award.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So, yeah, it's coming at us quick, and I am excited to, I mean, you know, I have high hopes for us, and I'm hoping that the high hopes of our viewers and listeners also, you know, come into play here.
What he's trying to say is vote for us, y'all, and we will continue to give you those instructions each and every week on how to do that. For what's it called? The Podcast Awards?
Correct? Yeah, so it's Podcast Awards is the URL. But the title of it is the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
Right.
But if you go podcastawards.com, that's when, come July 1st, any of the podcasts that are eligible, which we are, will be open for the listener nominations for the month of July, and then they'll announce the top 10 in each of the categories. We are in gaming and hobbies, of course, and that'll happen in August, and then they'll have their narrow it down. So basically, while we can't you know, while you, our listeners, can't guarantee that we get it, you can at least put us in the top 10 by being awesome.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And then from there, hopefully they have no choice but to recognize the excellence that is this podcast, due in no small part to the listener participation that we have every week.
Viewers mm-hmm. like you, y'all here in the chat with us live and listening after the fact. Well, Mac, life is good over here, man. Had a good Father's Day this past week. My wife got me dope presents, and I'm a very simple guy. She asked what I want for Father's Day, and I'm like, honey, I love you. I love the kids. I'm a happy man. I need nothing, right? I'm that type of guy. She got me a very, very cool present that was unexpected. Have you ever seen those little Funko Pops? The bobblehead little figures? Have you ever seen these, Mac?
Yeah, I've seen those.
So I had been thinking about getting one to put inside my PC. I don't know if you've ever seen how you can do that. Mac is, I don't care. You can facepalm all you want. I think it's dope, Mac. And I like it. So I So my wife got me this really, really cool one. It's a Black Panther Funko Pop. And I put it in my PC. So Wakanda forever. All hail King T'Challa. And I really liked it. And she got me some other cool things, too. And I just had a good, relaxing day. In other news, comedy's starting to pick up again. Clubs are slowly starting to open. Social distancing is in place. So I've started to book stuff again. Out of state, going to be hitting the road a little bit more frequently over the next couple months. So that's a good thing. And other than that, man, Mac, I have no complaints. We're not going to sit here and act like things aren't rough in the world. But right now, we're focused on positivity. So that's what we're focused on. Mac, I say we do one of the things we do best and talk about some gaming news. What do you think about that?
I think we should.
I think that's what we should do. That's what the people are here for. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode number 145 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Let's get right to it. Oh, Mac, so much to discuss this week. Let's talk about Star Wars Squadrons to begin. And I will read a little bit of this article. This one is on GameSpot.com by Janae Sitzes. It says, following the success of last year's Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, EA has announced a new Star Wars game is coming to consoles and PC, and you won't have to wait much longer to play it. Star Wars Squadrons will release October 2nd, 2020 on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Now, here's the cool thing about this game, Mac. VR fans can also get in on the fun, as the space shooter will also be playable in VR on PS4 and PC. So, number one, new Star Wars game. I know that you're a Star Wars guy, kind of, right? We were both excited for, what was it, Star Wars, was it, the one that we saw the preview for? What game was that?
1313.
Canceled Star Wars game. Since then, there have been some flops, but there's been some good ones. Now, this is on PC. Does a new Star Wars game get your blood going at all?
Well, a new Star Wars game by itself wouldn't get, you know, wouldn't make me excited. However, let's keep in mind that I come from the golden age of Star Wars video games. We're talking X-Wing, TIE Fighter, and X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. So, the idea, and I am hearing about this Star Wars game for the first time from your lips. Here.
Okay, okay.
So, a space shooter Star Wars game seems like a slam dunk to me. I love just the thought is getting me excited.
Yeah, now here's the question, because I know neither of us have like extensive experience with VR, but to me, when you think of a game or when you think of a universe that would be amazing in VR, I mean, Star Wars has to be one of the top five, right? I mean, we talk about Legend of Zelda, how awesome it would be in VR. You know, maybe you think about Skyrim, if you're anyone other than Maxion who has some strong opinions on Skyrim. But to me, Star Wars in VR just sounds absolutely amazing, and here's where they're doing it right. They've made it so that you can play Star Wars in VR and still play crossplay with people who are not using VR, which I think is crucial because I don't believe that VR is widely enough adopted for them to have their own VR community solely, right? They need to combine that community with those who are just playing it regularly. So do you think that's going to add to the game, VR headsets, or do you think that it's a gimmick? Even though you haven't seen it yet. We're talking in hypotheticals.
Well, I can certainly see it being really nice if inside of your cockpit you're able to, you know,
right,
flip the switches. I've always wanted to flip the switches inside of a TIE Fighter or an X-Wing. I think it would be awesome. But yeah, no. I'm just excited about this flight sim dog fighting space shooter that my brain is rapidly constructing from all the details. And in my head, at least, it looks amazing.
It'll be interesting to see how the controllers work, because I know with some VR games like that, they let you use an actual controller. Some of them even have you using a mouse and keyboard. Some let you use the native VR controllers. And I feel like using a mouse and keyboard would take away from the immersion. So hopefully they set this up in a way that you can use the controllers that come with the headset, right? That's my thought.
Joystick or nothing.
Well,
and if you have the VR controls, then just get yourself, you know, get yourself like a cup or something and pretend that it's a joystick.
Well, I don't know, though, because joysticks, yes, for flight sims, but in Star Wars, well, I don't know. It depends
well, this
on...
Is this not supposed to be a flight sim
space shooter? It is. It's a, yeah, space shooter, PvP, but also from people like Maction, single player, and I believe co-op stuff as well. So, yeah, you're right. Joystick may be the way to go to keep immersion intact. So we'll have to wait and see how they implement that, if at all.
And if it's co-op, then you can be pilot. I'll be co-pilot.
You know what? I'm a gunner, Mac. I'm a gunner.
Okay, sweet. I'll be pilot. You be gunner.
I would crash us, and you would be frustrated if I was piloting. You'd be like, dude, I cannot land a single shot because you can't keep the plane steady. It's a
TIE
fighter.
What you're telling me is that you always took the gunner's seat in the Warthog.
Oh, yeah, dude. You know what? I hated driving the Warthog in Halo because I was so bad at it. Yes, and Ishmobile in the chat wants to know if he can be Radio Man. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's keep things moving. Mac, this next one is more of a heavy story. And we would be remiss as a gaming podcast if we did not discuss this because it does involve the gaming community and involves things that are going on with Twitch. So I will just read some of this. I know we've been summarizing, but some things just need to be read. This is by Haley Williams on GameSpot.com. And it's about a lot of the allegations that we've seen in the gaming community lately. Let's start in the middle with one of the tweets that will summarize this. Someone named Your Starling tweeted, "I'm sick of being quiet. The CEO of Twitch was asked on an all-hands meeting about partners using their platform to abuse women, specifically using my case as an example. He chuckled and said, wow, things that go on our platform, can't really comment, and moved on." Mac, this past week we've seen a lot of accusations. I don't know if you're familiar with this or if you're hearing this for the first time. Okay, then sorry to throw you in the fire. We've seen a lot of accusations against big gaming personalities. Being accused of assault, being accused of verbal assault, sexual assault, all kinds of harassment. And Mac, you don't have to even comment on this if you don't want to. I will say, here at Two Nerds in a Pod, we're absolutely against that. And even though it's a two-man show here, we don't have a community that is supportive of that type of behavior. We don't ever collaborate with people, you know, who participate in that type of behavior. It brought up the question in my mind of how do you respond as a company when this type of thing happens? Whether it's gaming, whether it's, you know, finance, whatever it is, do you automatically fire the person? You know, do you take the word of the victim? You know, how do you handle it? And it's such a tough situation that I'm not really even gonna get too much into it. But Mac, I felt like it was crucial that we at least shared this story because it has blown up so big. And just because it's something that needs to be mentioned. You can't talk about games and not acknowledge that this type of stuff is happening. There were some accusations made against people at IGN, Wizards of the Coast this past week. It's all over and it's unfortunate. So I would say be good to each other. Treat everyone with respect and don't ever do anything that's not consensual. Mac, I don't know if you want to add anything. If not, whatever.
You know, I'll just add that... In a lot of situations, when somebody, you know, one of the most frustrating things is people who have been the victims of anything, whether we're talking about Black Lives Matter, whether we're talking about, you know, sexual assault, any of these situations where the source of the problem is a disparity in power between two different groups. You'll often find that the victims are not believed by most people. I think the important thing is always if someone comes with something, the first question, the first question can't be, or the first reaction can't be, but did it really?
Right.
You know,
right.
Your responsibility as someone is always, you know, make sure like a person's okay and make sure that you know you take the steps appropriate to defend somebody who's been victimized.
When someone does come forward with that type of statement, I think that it doesn't make you a bad person to want to do an investigation. I don't think that that means that you do not believe them, but I think that in the name of due process, it's important to collect data, to collect testimony, to find evidence, and find out the details of what happened. And I'll leave it at that. Let's move on to their next thing that we'd like to discuss this week. Oh, one other thing real quick. Twitch is doing a blackout day tomorrow, right? Some people are doing a blackout day on Wednesday to kind of say that they support the victims. And I'll just say, anyone who's streaming tomorrow, I don't think that that means you don't support the victims. I don't think that that means you think that Twitch has handled this correctly. People have different motivations for handling things different ways. So we're not judging anyone if you're streaming tomorrow or watching Twitch tomorrow. All right, so moving on to the next news story. Let's talk about the Super Smash Bros. Melee online multiplayer, Mac. It's weird to follow up that story with this one, but I'm excited for this. Super Smash Bros. Melee came out 18 years ago on the GameCube, and it still draws massive crowds at tournaments. As you know, Mac, and as I know, I've been to one or two. And so now there is an online service called Slippy that is designed to function along the GameCube emulator Dolphin that people are using to keep this game alive. Now, my thing is this wasted effort, or is there any way they can get around this without Nintendo just doing a cease and desist? Like, is there any type of loophole here when you create an online service for a game that has never had online, quite frankly? Can Nintendo stop it, or will they be able to keep this going?
Wow, that's a really good question.
Mr. Lawyer?
Mr. Totally Not a Lawyer, just plays one on a podcast. I would need to know more about the details of how it works and how they got it to work, because there is a certain there's a certain aspect to a video game where how are they getting like the information, right? The button presses, the what have you. What means are they doing that? Are they doing that by reading something, I don't know, passively that someone's logged into? Is it a situation where it's active? Is their program taking data from the console, from the, you know, what have you? Is that violating certain trade secrets? I mean, there's a whole mess of issues involved with that. Now, if we could trust a Nintendo to be cool, which I cannot stress this enough, we cannot trust Nintendo to be cool about anything good done with their intellectual property.
That's my thing, right? I agree.
Yeah, so, I highly suspect that even if it actually breaks no laws, strictly speaking, I expect for there to be some legal action from Nintendo toward them. But I mean, who knows? Maybe I could be wrong, and I am willing to be wrong. Nintendo, prove me wrong. just be chill, okay, Nintendo, and I will gladly, you be chill about this, Nintendo, and I will revisit my decision to never purchase another one of your items. Because I feel like this would be a step in the right direction for Nintendo.
I do too, man. I almost wonder how much bigger Nintendo could be if they would allow modding and if they would allow fan-based stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, if you look at like a game like, once again, I know you're not a Skyrim fan, but if you look at Skyrim, they allow modding. And I've been researching Skyrim VR. They have so many mods that make it look better, that make it, I think there's a co-op mod, it adds additional missions. I don't think that if Skyrim simply released 5 times in the past 10 years in different ways, that it would still be as popular as it is. I think that the modding community is a big part of why Skyrim is still so huge. And it just makes me wonder how much life could be extended in Nintendo's games if they would allow modding, right? If they would allow fan-based stuff to be added, if they would allow, you know, the Unreal Engine to be used to make Mario 64, right? If they would not take all that stuff down, you know, maybe they'd be even more popular than they are. So, just a thought. People in the chat seem to agree. Galvatron says that he guarantees Nintendo is consulting with their lawyers. Ishmobile says they have greatly extended the life of that game. Yeah, in relation to Skyrim, absolutely. So, oh, Mac, we could go on and on with news, but those are the main ones I wanted to share today. That's it for news.
All right. Well, now let's take a little look into the past with some video game history. And I want to start with... Well, so this week in years past, we've had a lot of interesting stuff. For example, Sonic the Hedgehog, released in 1991 this week for the Sega Genesis. I mean, that's a fantastic game. Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean... what can you say about that?
Have you seen the movie?
No, I have not. Is it good?
It, you know what? It's fine. It is what it's supposed to be, right?
Okay.
Like my kids really enjoyed it, and I was neutral on it, right? It's that mm-hmm. type of movie.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Ben Schwartz. I think he does great work. I mean, he certainly is doing great work on new DuckTales. So, I mean, I was hopeful for his performance.
Yeah,
and
so,
Jim Carrey, I mean...
Yeah, yeah, voice acting was phenomenal. Jim Carrey did what Jim Carrey does, which is great work. The plot of the movie was a kid's movie, right? But so it was fine.
I see. But at least it was no Artemis Fowl.
No, it was it was better than Artemis Fowl, absolutely.
Excellent. Call back to episode 144 there. Let's see. So yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog... let's see, in 2004, we saw the release of the first GBA video cartridges. Now, I never purchased any Game Boy Advance video cartridges, and I don't think I ever saw them in the wild, and it wasn't until many years later that I actually found out they were a thing. It was just a movie or TV show. As a matter of fact, I believe Pokemon had several of their, you know, of their episodes released, but they were a Game Boy Advance cartridge that you plugged in. One thing that was interesting is that due to licensing requirements, they actually had to agree to never or to not allow for those cartridges to be played on the GameCube Game Boy player.
Interesting.
Yeah, because in spite of how low resolution it was, in order for it to fit on that 64 megs, they, you know, the licensors were worried about people would put it in their GameCube Game Boy player and then make DVD or VHS rips of the movies in order to distribute, which, I mean, there were easier ways to copy things onto DVD or VHS in 2004 than to buy the GBA video cartridges, plug them in, and rip them from that. So, yeah, but nonetheless, the licensors insisted on it, so it happened that way. In 2011, we saw the release of Project Zomboid for PC. That's a game that I have played, I own, and I've played it several times over the years. Some good, solid, you know, isometric zombie strategy awesomeness. But I think the one that's most important from this week was released in 2004, and that's the Mega Man Anniversary Collection. And I know, I am always talking about Mega Man whenever it possible. But there's something about the Mega Man Anniversary Collection, which was released for GameCube, PS2, and Xbox. And there was also a corresponding anniversary collection on the Game Boy Advance that wasn't released till later, but that's neither here nor there. The interesting thing about the anniversary collection is the sort of difference between between emulation and ports. So we've got all these things that we see video games going through, right? We see emulated games, we see ports of games, we see remakes and remasters. And each of them, while some of them have things in common, are a little tiny bit different. Obviously, we've seen remasters where you just take a video game and you put new, better graphics on it, right?
Sure.
As a matter of fact, like the Halo Master Chief Collection that I've been playing lately, you can press tab and swap in between new graphics or old graphics, right? Just add a button push. And that's definitely a remaster. We've got remakes where things are added, stuff are changed. When they did DuckTales, and they called it DuckTales Remastered, when they released it on those things, it actually added whole new levels. It added new stuff like, you know, like the intro level, they added a few more things, you know, a bit more of a remake. But the anniversary collection for Mega Man was definitely one of my favorite things to point out and be like, hey, look, here's the difference between an emulated game and a port of a game. So when you've got an emulated game, you're not only, or at least attempting to, reproduce everything that went on in, say, the original Nintendo, right? When you're playing Mega Man 3 and you're playing an emulated version, ideally in areas that on the original Nintendo would have slowed down the game, would also slow down the game in the emulated version.
Can I ask a question about that? Because
absolutely.
I almost wonder if that is the case, because emulation uses an emulator, obviously, that's supposed to be very similar to the Nintendo, right? Let's talk about NES. However, because you are not running it on NES hardware, you're running it on PC hardware that is probably more powerful than the NES, would it still slow down in those areas, or would that additional power sometimes prevent that from happening?
No, it 100% will slow down in the same areas, because even though you've got plenty more power, and while I will say it 100% will, it, as long as the emulator is, you know, built, is a good emulator, and it's emulating the system properly, and you've got enough power to run it, the same slowdowns and the same issues ought to be there. Emulation is not an exact science, and there's plenty of times where people, you know, get it wrong. And that's very obvious in things like there are plenty of struggles with emulating Nintendo 64 games. But that's a conversation for another time. But you will find that if the emulator has been built properly, it will slow down at the same point.
Okay, cool, cool.
As a matter of fact, if you play, say, the original, let's play Mega Man 3, let's play Gemini Man stage, you'll get slowed down on the original Nintendo if you get too many enemies on screen. That'll happen in an emulator as well, even on a very powerful computer like the ones we're using right now to record on. Definitely more powerful in comparison.
Sure.
But we play, say, the Anniversary Collection on the original Xbox. The game was rebuilt to run on the Xbox. Now, the original Xbox, less powerful than our computers, much more powerful than the original NES, and by playing that level, that time, reproducing all the conditions, you won't get the same slowdown just because they took the code, and instead of it running like a Nintendo game, it runs like an Xbox game. And so, the Anniversary Collection, definitely a... you know, has a special place in my heart, but one of the things that I think is great, because on my modded original Xbox, I have both an NES emulator with Mega Man 3, and I have the Anniversary Collection, it's super easy for me to flip back and forth, and back when I was actively YouTubing, way back in the day, I actually made use of the Anniversary Collection to show, recorded from my original Xbox, to show the differences between how emulations and ports are. That's why the Anniversary Collection, to me at least, is something that that I should want to talk about, not just because it's Mega Man, although that certainly, you know, is endears me to it, but also because of just the excellence that they did in porting that game when they ported it forward to the Anniversary Collection. It's really good.
Awesome.
Anyway, I've gone on much too long, but there's just some video game history for you.
No, that was interesting. You could never go on too long about video game history. Well, now it's time for our topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, today we're just going to talk about Mixer. It's going to be straightforward. I'm going to tell people what's going on. I want to get opinions from people in the chat. If you have opinions after the fact, tweet at us. We want to hear them. Mac, Mixer is shutting down. To give everybody some history on what has happened with Mixer over the past year or so, they were able to acquire some very, very big Twitch streamers. They got Ninja to come over. They got Shroud to come over. They got King Gathalion to come over. They paid each of these individuals a contract and amount of money and said, listen, you're probably not going to get all your followers to come over with you, but we'll pay you guaranteed amount of money to come stream here exclusively. And those three and a few others did. Well, now Mixer is shutting down, and they sent out a tweet the other day that effectively said, we're going to stop our operations. We're planning on moving everything over to Facebook Gaming. We hope that you will come with us on this journey. Now, when I looked into it further, Facebook is not buying Mixer. It's just kind of an understanding, I guess, that now, hey, everyone, let's migrate over to Facebook and let's do our thing. Unless more details have emerged, Facebook is not actually buying Mixer. The other thing that's really weird about this situation, in my opinion, Mac, is it boggles the mind that this is happening. The other thing that's weird about it is Mixer didn't give any notice to their streamers or their partners that this was going to happen. They didn't give them a month's notice. They didn't give them a week's notice. They just kind of tweeted it out and said, surprise, we're done. So I kind of want to get your view on this, on how they handled it. And also, what's your favorite platform to watch streams on?
Okay. So as for how they handle it, I don't think it's ever been appropriate for someone, in lieu of making official statements, to just announce things on Twitter. I will let you all draw your conclusions about which people I'm talking about, but Mixer is definitely in that group of people now. So not a very classy move. Not classy, Microsoft. But when I watch streams, I watch on Twitch.
Yeah, so I once heard someone, like a social media guru, say that it doesn't matter where you do what you do, as long as the platform doesn't matter, basically. It's the following. If you have a rabid following, you can move, you can go other places, and they will follow you. But if you're a mid-level streamer on Mixer, let's say you're pulling 500 views on Mixer, right? It's a lot to ask your 500 viewers to come over to Twitch to register if they weren't already registered on Twitch, to follow you on Twitch, and then to subscribe to you on Twitch. There are literally, and I was talking with people about this on my stream last night, there are literally Mixer partners who probably made most of their living doing that. And they got no notice whatsoever as to the fact that Mixer is completely going out of business and saying, hey, let's move somewhere else. Now, to be fair, that's not any different than what happens all the time with business, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like Mixer, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm holding them to an unfair standard, Mac. I feel like they should have let people know in advance, even though most companies don't. I feel like they could have told their partners, listen, we know that you're feeding your kids off of this. We know that maybe you quit your day job to do this on our platform. We're going to be leaving soon. And I feel like that would have been the right thing to do. Maybe not the right business move, but it would have been the ethical thing to do, in my opinion. I don't know if it sounds like you would agree based on what you said earlier.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I didn't think that Mixer was doing great, but I also didn't think Mixer was, like, doing poorly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
One thing Mixer definitely had going for it was the latency on its streams was incredibly small. Like, you and I, we are used to having latency on the order of, say, 20, 30 second lag. You know, just because of how long it lags before the audience sees what we're talking about or sees exactly what just happened. And then the time that it takes for them to type in and respond, you know what I mean? That gives us that 20, 30 second latency or so. But I mean, you know, Mixer was just practically darn near instant, you know?
No, it's true. And so full disclosure, I'll give people a peek behind the curtain. So I stream on Twitch a few days a week, right? And Mac, you know that back in the day, I used to stream exclusively NBA 2K.
PlayStation 3.
From the PlayStation 4, correct.
From the PlayStation 4. And I mean, back in the day, we, of course, would do Man Cave TV, which was the name of the show back before it was a podcast. We also streamed it from the same console.
Right. And so back when I was doing NBA 2K, I was doing it every night, and I was probably in the top 10 streamers on NBA 2K at that time. I was pulling a significant amount of views. Now, I stopped streaming NBA 2K quite a while ago. I do different stuff now. No desire to go back. My stream is not nearly as popular as it used to be. And so I was listening to a podcast by a Twitch streamer named Professor Broman. He seems to be a great guy. I don't know him, but I enjoy his content. And he was interviewing a Mixer streamer, and he said, you know, if you are struggling on Twitch, you know, maybe consider going to Mixer, you know, for a while. Like, try it for a few months and see what happens. And so I was telling my wife, I was like, honey, maybe I should just try Mixer for a little bit. I love the people on my Twitch community, and I want them to come with me, but maybe I should go to Mixer. And literally a couple days later, Mixer shut down. And so, Mac, the reason I asked you what your favorite platform is to watch streams is because I feel like Twitch almost has a monopoly, and I don't know if it's that they are better or if it's just that they were here first. Because there are other places to watch streams. You can watch streams on YouTube, right? And YouTube is no chump in the gaming industry, in the media industry. You can watch streams on Facebook. I don't really like Facebook, so I don't. But my point is there's other legitimate platforms, but everyone thinks of Twitch when they think of streaming. And I'm trying to figure out why that is. Because it's kind of a business of, and I'm not venting, I'm just stating fact. It's kind of a business where the rich get richer on Twitch. And unless you come up with a viral video off of Twitch, it's really hard to grow. So it's so interesting to me that Mixer could not somehow be, you know, the kids that were too cool to stream on Twitch and turn that into a bigger thing. And it's unfortunate that they are shutting down. Those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah.
So
I wish.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wish I had any real insight into it. I mean, I feel like as for streaming, I mean, yeah, Twitch has been around a long time. It has, you know, it has it has very powerful corporate backing behind it and has communities that seem to have a lot of passion. But like you were saying, those statements taken individually are no less true of something like YouTube. And why is it that YouTube gaming just doesn't seem to have quite the same pull as Twitch?
I agree 100%, dude. 100%. And, you know, just to kind of wrap up some of the comments in the chat, Galvatron says, unannounced layoffs and business closures happen all the time. Doesn't make it right, but each person's career is their own responsibility. That's 100% right. This is no different than if people got laid off from work. It's just unfortunate. And he also says YouTube is owned by Google. Twitch is owned by Amazon. A bigger concern than business closing is the big monopolies owning everything. Pretty soon, the only companies that will exist are Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Facebook, and ExxonMobil, and a few others. It's a valid point, Mac. These companies are buying up everything. I mean, Disney owns Marvel. They own ESPN. I mean, these 10 companies in the world just dominate, right?
Don't Eddie, I hope nobody misunderstands my comment about these, you know, these two giants of streaming to think for even a moment that I'm on board with the monopolization. I mean, I know we've talked about it in the past on the show, but I don't believe that any platform is your friend. And a lot of that reason has to be with the fact that no company has your best interests at heart. And that becomes in exponentially more true the larger the company gets, and the more businesses and the more conglomerations it has. So yeah, I'm not a fan of this concentration of power, or monopolization, but you know, I still, just for apples to apples, the two closest things would be the YouTube gaming and the, you know, and Twitch. And I wish I knew what market trends, what forces made one popular or made one do so well where the other didn't. But if I did, I would be making that thing myself and making a competitor that was working and getting that fat stacks of cash for myself.
And that's why it's so disappointing to me that Mixer failed. Now, Rerect, welcome Rerect to the chat. He or she says, I feel like Mixer was just made for Xbox exclusively, and that is true. It was initially just an Xbox thing. You could watch it directly from your Xbox. I looked recently to see how many people were streaming Valorant, or rather how many people were watching Valorant, which is a PC game, and there were maybe you know, 500 watching Valorant on Mixer, whereas on Twitch, you know, it's 50,000, 100,000. So it's a lot harder to get discovered. Ishmobile brings up some good points as well. He says the Shrouds and Ninjas will survive, but the littler guys will suffer. And that's where it's unfortunate. But that's really what I had to say about this topic, Mac.
Yeah, well then let's move on from the topic as we've gone on, and let's look at something a little bit smaller scale. Let's talk about somebody who's trying to get a game, get an idea, get a vision off of the ground. And let's see what we think. This is called Saint Kotar. I've put a link in the chat to the Kickstarter page for this project. We're talking about a psychological horror adventure set in a small rural town plagued by macabre murders and strange phenomena, allegedly related to devil worship and witchcraft.
Oh boy.
So, Red Martyr Entertainment, this is their first Kickstarter. They are looking for $43,000 to get this project completed. They are currently at about 15,000, and they've got about 25 or so days left to go. It is a pseudo 3D point-and-click adventure game, which naturally tells you why it showed up on my feed. They actually call it a 2.5D. And for those of you who aren't too familiar with the lingo, very often what that means is you've got something that's built out in three dimensions, but the perspective is limited to one, you know, to one angle at once. So while it has taken on different kinds of names in the past, 2.5D is their way of saying, hey, it's a three-dimensional-ish type thing, but we've got it at a fixed viewpoint, each scene that you're basically in. Now, the early moments of this certainly reminded me very much of the Alone in the Dark video game. I'm talking 1992, not so much 2008. They do have a playable demo/prologue.
Nice.
That has 2 to 3 hours of gameplay in it. So it is a hefty demo. It is a hefty proof of concept for you. If you're interested in the game, they've got $17 for an early bird, you know, backing in order to get the game to be released August of 2021. After these $17 early bird slots are taken, which I think they've got like 30 more or so, after that it's $22 for the same early bird thing. Now, the whole thing is set inside of Croatia, which actually happens to be where the team is from who's making this. So they're making what they know. They're drawing on influences like they do specifically name Broken Sword and Gabriel Knight, Black Mirror. These are all some, you know, some video games, point and clicks and the like. Authors, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Allan Poe, and R.W. Chambers. Television series like Twin Peaks and True Detective, and movies like Seven and the Witch that have certainly been their inspirations for what exactly is going on. But yeah, so there's just a quick little rundown of Saint Kotar. It would be, you know, not Kotor, but Kotar. So, Mr. Nice Guy, what do you make of this?
Man, this is, Mac, this is one of those situations where I have to look at it objectively and say, not is it a game that I want to play, but is this well put together?
That means he hates it.
No, it doesn't, dude. It doesn't. It just means I have to look at it for what it is. If I'm reviewing a game, I can't say, I don't like puzzle games, so this gets a zero, right? I have to look at the game and say, is it well executed? Is it fun? Does it have replayability? Right? There's factors involved. So when I look at this as a Kickstarter, I think it looks great. I mean, I like that they specifically outlined what their influences are, because sometimes that really shows you what the outcome's going to be, right? I mean, it's just like how you can tell something about a person by the music they listen to and the comedians they like, right? If they support certain types of people, then they're gonna be a certain type of person. Anyway, point being, I like that they really make it clear who they are and what they're trying to accomplish. I like that they have early bird pricing. I think that that really establishes that they're going to reward people who are early adopters. And then I also like the concept art that I'm looking at. It kind of gives me like an Alan Wake vibe. I don't know if you ever played that game.
I didn't play Alan Wake.
Okay, Alan Wake was phenomenal. It was a horror game. And as a guy who really doesn't like horror games, it was a game that I liked. And I feel like this could have the same vibe. So I really don't have anything bad to say about this. It looks like a masterclass in a Kickstarter.
Nice. Well, they do say that when it's all said and done, you should expect a dark psychological horror adventure game with up to 20 hours of gameplay. The game is in development for PC with planned ports to consoles, PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch, as well as mobile ports planned. So it sounds like if they're able to deliver on all of their ports, that they'll have quite a lot of, you know, quite a lot of things to go for. Although I do worry with this little money being asked for, this scope of a game, and that many ports, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and mobile, then that does make me a little bit concerned that if they do get the ports going, that they will be either way, way, way far in the future, to the point that maybe you might not even have wanted to mention them, maybe? Or that that trying to do those too quick with the planned ports might just wind up taxing the team a bit too much. But I don't know. I'm no accountant, but I just think that that's a little bit of a big ask with that little amount of money.
One thing that I find kind of strange about it, this is just something that I don't understand. How do you have a psychological thriller in 2.5D? I feel like it's almost cliche that some of these psychological horror video games have a lot of jump scares, you know what I mean? They have mm-hmm. those moments where you're just walking and there's music playing and then something jumps out at you. I don't know how you can get that vibe from a game that is 2.5D. And Mac, I think back to Deadlight or even a game like Limbo. Those mm-hmm. were 2D games. They were platformers effectively, but they had some horror aspects. I never really felt scared when I played those because it was two-dimensional. A three-dimensional game, I feel like it could get me a little bit, but I don't know if this could. So that's an interesting design choice.
Well, I will say that the last two-dimensional horror game that I played was probably The Last Door. And not only was it 2D, it was also very low resolution. It was pixelated and the like. And that did a very good job of unsettling me. So I think it can be done, and I think it can be done well. And so, yeah, I couldn't quite explain to you how it was that it did it for me. It has, as the French would say, a certain I don't know what. But yeah, I'm a believer in the medium to make it happen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, well, that being said, that is Saint Kotar. And I think it's time for us to say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kickstarted. And I think this checks all the boxes for me, and I would say kickstart.
Yeah, and I would say kickstart as well. I'll reiterate the one thing I just said, which is the 2.5D, to me, is an interesting design choice. The other minor thing, Mac, is it's $17 early bird and has 20 hours of gameplay. If you're the type of person who really likes to get bang for your buck like I am, to me that's not the price for a 20-hour game. But you know what mm-hmm. I mean? But that's just me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about Hollow Knight. That game was like $15 and I put like 60 hours into it. Not everything's a Hollow Knight, but to me it's not a lot of bang for your buck. Maybe it's just a really, really high quality game all the way through. So I do think it should be kickstarted though.
All right, so that's a kickstart from me, a kickstart from you. We have some people sounding off in the chat. So far, it looks like kickstarts. I haven't seen any kicks yet, So hopefully, good one way or the other, good luck to Red Martyr Entertainment. Saint Kotar looks good. We hope that you guys make your goal and that this gets kickstarted. I'm definitely inclined toward it, so I think I'll be picking up one of these early bird things myself. So at the very least, if you guys are so inclined, hold off just a few minutes until after the end of the show so I can get on one of those early birds before you guys snipe it from me. So that has been Kick or Kickstart.
Nice. Mac, we should come up with like a golden buzzer type of award for ones that we are actually putting our own money into. Because I feel like that doesn't happen that often. It happens maybe like once every 50 episodes where there's one that we're like, yeah, I'm going to put money on this. So we should think about that in the future. Anyway, moving on to our next segment. It's time for a segment we call Nerd Flex.
Woo-hoo.
A segment where we do some trivia and we try to get it right. And every week I introduce the segment with different wording. Now, if you're here live, you have the opportunity to put trivia questions in the chat, but we also have a test bank that we like to use. So, first trivia question, Mac. And you know what? We do these randomly from this test bank we have. This one is one that I guarantee Mac will get right.
Ooh, no pressure. Excellent. Yeah, no pressure.
It's an FPS question. In the Half-Life games,
ooh,
who is the sinister interdimensional bureaucrat? I have no idea.
That would be the G-Man. See, now that I say that, I realize it is possible that there is another name that he goes by, but as far as I'm aware, we call him the G-Man. He speaks with this really weird cadence to his voice, which you hear very prominently at the beginning of Half-Life 2. Rise and shine, Mr. Freeman. Not to suggest that you've been sleeping on the job. No one could be more deserving of a rest. You know, stuff like that. It's a weird cadence to the voice, really well and creepily portrayed. That being said, yeah, the G-Man, I think, is what we call him.
Okay, awesome. And the correct, and I'm going to go with whatever you say, because I honestly don't know. I've played these games, but it's been so long, and I don't remember them. The correct answer is not the G-Man, but G-Man.
G-Man, okay,
so,
sure,
I'm just kidding. We'll give it to you, Mac. You know,
okay, thank
technicality,
you.
We'll give you that one. Let's do another one.
Okay.
So, Zelda. This is a good one, and it's going to require us to think it through. We're going to get this right. What is the name of the first game starring Tingle?
Ooh, starring Tingle?
Yeah, I almost wonder if the term starring just means that Tingle is in the game. Because all the games star Link, right? Link is the star.
Well, no, there is actually like a Tingle's Treasure Hunt video game.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you know how there's like Link's crossbow training? Tingle's Treasure Hunt is totally a game. It's the only game that I know Tingle features very prominently in, and I guess, and just because he's in the title. So that's the only one I know. Tingle's Treasure Hunt, I know that is a game.
Okay, so is Tingle the one that says, hey, listen, is that Tingle?
No, that's Navi,
that's
the
Navi
fairy. I am disappointed in you.
I should know this, I know. This is a basic question. But so Tingle, tell me who's Tingle, because I honestly don't remember.
So Tingle appears in some of the games. He's like this short, stout dude dressed up in a green onesie, and he wants to be a Kokori. You know, he wants to be one of the Kokori race, the forest people.
He's not the one every time you get like a Deku seed that pops up in like Breath of the Wild. It's not the same guy.
No, not the same guy. Those are like the ones where you get the nuts from. And he's that big, and he's got those maracas, and he shakes them.
Okay, you know what? I thought I knew my Zelda. Apparently,
no,
I do not.
No,
I do
I
not.
I mean...
All right, well, let's go
I
with your answer.
I think the answer is Tingle's Treasure Hunt.
Let's go with Tingle's Treasure Hunt. Final answer. I've never even heard of this. The correct answer is freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land. I have never heard of this before.
Yeah, nope, me neither. I mean, maybe I misthought the title, but I thought for sure that Tingle's Treasure Hunt was the title of one. But freshly picked rupees. Yeah, no, nope.
Okay.
We deserve to miss that one. Well, I apologize. Mr. Nice Guy, you know, I said earlier that I was disappointed in you. You need to, you know, be disappointed in me now.
No, that was a crazy question. Well, why don't we do this, Mac? Do you mind reading Ish Mobile's question from the chat?
Sure, we've got this. How many input options, buttons, analog sticks, etc., does the DualShock 4 controller have? So maybe we can actually get this right.
Yeah.
So...
I'm not going to cheat. Are you looking at one? Are you going to cheat and look
no,
at one,
I
Mac?
Don't. Are you kidding me? I don't have a DualShock in the house.
Okay.
I mean, I've got a controller. I've got a generic controller, and I'm just going to hold it in my hands as I think. But there are probably four buttons, whether they're triangle, circle, square, and
X.
And X. Yeah, so there's probably four of those.
Yep.
Is there still a D-pad on the DualShock 4?
There absolutely is, yes.
Okay, sweet. So we've got another four-ish buttons
there.
That's
eight.
We've got two analog joysticks.
That's correct.
And so those are two. However, the analog joysticks, I do know ever since... Oh, gosh. I forget when it was began, but that clicking in on them count as another input
as
well.
I feel like this is a trick question, because the correct answer is infinite, right?
I think he's not getting that, trying to be that trap us. Let's see. We're coming with four buttons, one D-pad, two analog controls, a start and select, a touchpad, two bumpers, two triggers. So Ishmobile says the answer is 22. Two analog sticks, two stick click buttons. So we got that. Four D-pad buttons, four action/shape buttons.
Okay.
Two triggers, two buttons. Mic'd. The PlayStation button, the share options, the touchpad click, and the gyro. And even though that didn't all make it, I feel like we probably only missed one of those. Nope, we missed the PlayStation button and the touchpad click. So you and I, we only got to 20 input options of 22 input options.
Gotcha.
So I still think, though, getting to 20 of the options... I thought was pretty darn good.
Gotcha.
The gyro is what... Now, I'm not sure exactly how it came down on when things ended and when things were going, but I do... The podcast recording will exonerate and show that I did ask about a gyro in the PS4 controller.
Exactly. Well, that has been Nerdflex. Thank you for your questions.
All right, well, now let's talk a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast, and because, as video gamers, so much of what we enjoy of our hobby interacts with the law, well, you know, we need to talk a little bit about it, and that's what this is about, and we are going to have a little bit of an update to the legalese that we discussed in episode 138, and that surrounded Billy Mitchell and Twin Galaxies. So, Guinness World Records released a statement, and it's on their home website, according to Guinness, they said that they didn't think that there was sufficient evidence to disqualify Billy Mitchell's records across the board. Twin Galaxies feels differently, of course, and they stand by their decision, but Guinness has said that because they didn't feel there was enough evidence to disqualify all of his scores, they said, we, by default, when there is a, you know, when there is a scandal, if you will, like this, we err on the side of the original, finding. And they're like, and our original opinion was Billy Mitchell has all of this stuff going on, and he gets all these records. So they are like, we're going to let that stand until such time that we feel like there is convincing evidence. Like I said, Twin Galaxies is very firmly on their side that it's just like, no, it can't possibly be. So what does this mean so far? Well, it doesn't mean too much. We are still waiting for the Mitchell v. Twin Galaxies, the lawsuit, the defamation lawsuit. The case is set for July 6th, and that's when we will have our first hearing. Shortly after that, we will have discovery. And I mentioned back in episode 138 that I'm incredibly excited for the discovery process, because it will basically lay out all of the details in extremely well-documented way, all in one place. So being able to see all of that is going to be very useful. It will also be the opportunity for there to be specifically crafted, targeted responses to these sorts of things. Now, Twin Galaxies has certainly upheld that, you know, as Billy Mitchell has said, they've called me a cheater and this is defamation and all that. Twin Galaxies has said, you know what? What you're trying to do, Billy Mitchell, is you're trying to essentially do a slap suit, which is a strategic lawsuit against public participation. Slap with two P's. And saying that you don't like what we're saying, and therefore you're trying to sue us to keep us quiet, to keep other people from saying that you are, you know, that you are a cheater. And they're kind of standing their ground. So we don't have that much new information about this at this point. With one small bit that I missed a lot earlier, and I didn't bring this up in 138, but as I was rereading through this and trying to see if there was anything I missed, one thing that Twin Galaxies does say, and they use it as evidence to strengthen their position, that this is a lawsuit just to prevent them from, you know, from speaking truth to power, as it were. Although, considering Billy Mitchell being a powerful figure, I don't know if that's too much. Point being, I'm editorializing there, that they do point out that they said during the process where we were looking into these scores and checking everything up, Billy Mitchell did not participate in defending his scores or offering any kind of context or what have you. It is kind of, you know, indicative here that he decided to wait until we took everything down and then sues us instead of actually trying to defend him, defend his scores. Rather, he just says, oh, well, you took down my scores, you're calling me a cheater, I'm gonna sue you. And there's some back and forth about that, but I, when we were originally talking about it, missed that that was a part of the things that that Twin Galaxies was claiming. So, anyway, all that being said, we don't have that much new information. Even this case, all I can really say is you guys should all watch that Guinness World Records statement. It has a very brief statement from Guinness, and then it has a much longer editorializing bit by Billy, wherein he is quite insufferable. But nonetheless, there it is. July 6th is the day where we will start to see things like discovery and start to find out new details. But in the meantime, stay tuned to Legalese for more details as they become available. And that's been Legalese, and that's been the six segments of the show. So now I guess it's just time for us to wind down and share with everybody the nerdy things you are into. We want you here to share with us your nerdy things while we share ours, so that we can all get into the same stuff together. Give us your recommendations in the chat. So, Mr. Nice Guy, what have you been into?
Dude, so I've been into the Last of Us Part 2, first and foremost. Playing a lot of that on the PlayStation 4. And I think The Last of Us, the first one, came out 2013, 2014. So it's been 7 years since we got a new game, a new full game, right? it doesn't hit me the same way that the first one did. And I don't really want to talk about it because I don't want any semblance of spoilers, because I hate when people do that. So once it's been a little while, I'll give my thoughts on the game. I will say this, I'm enjoying it, but it just isn't the same feel as the first one. And I can get more into that at a later date. I've been playing Teamfight Tactics and what else? A little bit of Hearthstone this week. Got a few games of Hearthstone in, and that's pretty much been it. I don't think I even played Valorant this past week. Just had too much other stuff going on. As far as what I have been watching, my wife and I, what did we watch for date night this past week? Oh, we've been rewatching The Hunger Games. That's what we've been rewatching. And those movies are phenomenal, dude. I feel like they're never going to get old. Are you a Hunger Games fan, or is that not your thing, Mac?
And not really my thing.
I think they're great, and I feel like it really, The Hunger Games was so influential that now we have Battle Royale. Like, I really believe that the idea for Battle Royale came from Hunger Games, but that's just me. And then, you know, just watching a few other things here and there. So, Mac, how about you?
Well, for my part, Mrs. the Mac and I, we have been watching things like like The Office, always watching Star Trek. It's our go-to for all time. A little bit of Avatar The Last Airbender when it's time to relax. Love that show. So nothing too surprising, if I'm honest. We tried a little thing on Netflix, a new Netflix show called The Floor is Lava. It was not impressive. So
what genre is that? I've only heard the name.
It's like game show. Game show, physical game show thing, kind of like Ninja Warrior or, or Amazing Race. And it just, yeah. So I would say avoid. As for playing, I've been playing some of that Halo Master Chief Collection with my friend. Although I have been listening to plenty of podcasts lately, some good ones like Beholder's Eye. It's a good D&D podcast.
Yep, shout out to them.
Friends of the show. Dungeons and Daddies, not a BDSM podcast, but a Dungeons and Dragons podcast it's about dads, like dads who are, you know, thrown into the fantasy world. It's interesting. It grows on you.
Huh.
And a few things like that. But yeah, that's what I've been watching and what I've been playing. Thanks everybody for sharing, for being a part of the show.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in to episode number 145. We'll catch y'all next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.